custom furniture is like boot camp for that, right? It's if you say yes to things that make you uncomfortable and expand your skill set, you can get incredibly good at understanding wood and how to work with it.
That's the voice of Brent Bigelow, owner of Bigelow Woodcraft. And I'm excited to talk with him right after these quick words from our sponsors.
Introducing Astra HP, the newest high-performance innovation in cutting-edge technology from Bits and Bits. Let me tell you what's new about it. It's incredibly thin, measuring at just 0.3 microns. It's also tougher than ever with an impressive 5,000 Vickers hardness. And it's specially designed to reduce friction and heat buildup, leading to cleaner cuts and longer tool life. Available now on all their newest spiral CNC bits and router bits. So if you want to check it out yourself, go to bitsbits.com. That's BITS, BITS.com.
Hello and welcome to Building a Furniture Brand with Ethan Abramson, the show that talks about the business behind the furniture business. On this episode, I sit down with Brent Bigelow, owner of Bigelow Woodcraft. Brent has a busy five-person company, everybody working in sync to keep the orders on track. And if you listen close, you can even hear them all working in the background of this episode. And honestly, I think that's great because it gives a real snapshot of the way Brent sees his role in his company. He understands that as a business grows, the role of the owner changes, and he doesn't want to be, in his own words, the bottleneck for production. So even when he's talking with me, he's also aware that work needs to go on. And he has built his company in a way that lets it do just that. Follow along as we talk about changing your goals, being a good boss, building a visual brand, and much more. So let's start the episode and hear about Brent's story in his own words.
I would say that I've always designed and built things to a degree and taken that, you know, a little bit serious. As a teenager, just making random things or taking things apart. I love to take things apart as a kid. And I would build myself like a little coffee table I had in my bedroom that was, you know, a bizarre tiny little box that I sat in front of this chair and watched TV as a kid. Or we used to build these custom hookahs out of like copper pipe, which was not advisable by any stretch, but as a strapped Olive Garden server with a circle of friends with an interest in smoking tobacco out of a hookah, that was the best way. You know, you'd go to the hardware store and load up on supplies and put something together. And yeah, so I feel like I've always been this guy who's like investigating problems and solving them through either a weird or a more thought out thorough design. And so that naturally just ended me up here. I went to university and I took the introduction to architecture classes and I kind of bounced off that. I was 20. So I dropped out and then I was a carpenter's apprentice for about a year. And I worked for this great company that did antique home restoration. And so that was a really great place to actually get woodworking skills and knowledge. And then I went to business school and dropped out of that as well. And then I finally was just in this place where I was like, I'm building things. I'm getting paid by people to build them for them. I need to just start a business. And so I just followed that to here. And that was maybe 10 years ago.
I think out of all the episodes I've done, that might have been the first combination of Olive Garden employee and hookah designer that I've gone together with. So congratulations on being a first there.
Thank you. That's a big box to tick.
I obviously want to get into your furniture company and how you're building things and how you're working with your employees and the development of all that. But I want to start with something that is outside of the world of building furniture, but still very important for a furniture company. And that is what your company looks like to the outside, your branding, your visual voice of what your customers see. And looking through your website, your information, everything about your company, you definitely have a very stylized look to it, and something that I have to imagine has been developed as you've developed the company. Let's start there. Let's start with what you wanted your company to look like when you started it and how you developed your visual language to look like it does today.
For sure. So in the beginning, I was a little lost with it, and I hired a friend of mine, Dave Bach. He's a great graphic designer, and we had this like incredible meeting where we just talked about post-industrialism and all these brands that existed sort of before plastic was invented. And I latched onto that as sort of the North Star for the brand. What does print media look like for companies that made, you know, steel and wood home products for the kitchen before everything was just molded plastic? If you imagine a roll of tickets, like the admission tickets, the classic ones that are perforated and you tear them apart, you get them at, you know, country fairs and whatever. That's sort of a simple thing that people can picture that my branding stems from. Yeah, that's where the brand started. And so the logo is a very simple word mark that might be found around that time. And we, at one point, we had brass rivets as like a part of our branding, and we had like grocery string or butcher paper, stuff like that. Like just everything from sort of the 40s, 50s, 60s, before everything was incredibly mass produced and on this path through shipping containers and globalization to exploitative labor markets and whatever you want to call the situation we're in now, where everything has the cost of exploitation built in. And so our brand is about a sort of fantasy reality as if that didn't happen, and we're making products without exploitation built into the price.
Are you thinking of all your designs for the furniture and for the home goods in that eggshell of that design, or can you sometimes go outside of it if you feel like that's where the business is going?
I think I like to see it as kind of a tether, you know, like it's something that we, or I at least, am conscious of while I'm designing things. And I don't really want to put something out into the world that isn't purely utilitarian. And that's sort of where the tether lets me go, I guess. I don't know. It's hard for me to take visual print media based sort of ideation and apply it to like physical products that you use with your hands and give you value in your life. I think that that's a different thing for me. And there's more stones to uncover in that sort of physical world.
When you were starting this and we're moving from the visual to the actual building, but staying with the concept of visual ideas make reality products, were you thinking of this company as more than just a custom building? We're doing one-offs for people, we're making designs and we're selling it. Were you thinking of it as I'm going to grow this? It might not start this way, but it's going to grow into a store. It's going to be like a,
for sure,
actual store, a store concept of all my ideas, all the things, and putting them together in,
yeah,
some type of cohesive way to be able to sell. Sort of the sum is greater than the parts.
From early on, I've always known that I wanted to build this into something bigger, for sure. The one-off pieces are kind of just a means to an end to develop the skills to understand wood as a medium and all the intricacies that come with that. And custom furniture is like boot camp for that, right? It's, if you say yes to things that make you uncomfortable and expand your skill set, you can get incredibly good at understanding wood and how to work with it pretty fast. So I didn't really want to put out products until I was comfortable knowing exactly how wood worked. But I also always knew that wood was my medium. Like, it's just such a great resource. And I guess my draw initially in woodworking was about that, as like wood being such a great medium. It's a renewable resource. It's durable. It demands a mutual respect with its user, which I really like. You know, it's not a bulletproof miracle product. I just think it's such a great material to work with. And so that was what initially drew me in. That's a little off topic, but yeah, I've always wanted to make a product line, to sum it up. And as soon as I was able to, I did. And the first product line was terrible. Everyone would say that, I'm sure, but it was bad. And luckily, I pushed my finger into a bandsaw and had to take a month off and had to reevaluate and go back to custom work for a while out of necessity, and wasn't really able to give that first product line the time to succeed. And looking back on it, when I sort of relaunched the second product line, the much better one that actually did start to take off, like, that was a blessing. And luckily my fingers are all intact. It was a minimal thing. So
this is definitely the second part of your story. You talked about what you did when you were growing up, the design, working for other people, going to business school for a little bit, doing different things, and then moving into selling things. And then what you just talked about is sort of that second arc where you start to gain momentum and you start to put things out into the world and you develop a little speed for this business, moving it forward into actually being a sustainable business, making you money. And I want to talk more about that for a minute, because there are people who start furniture businesses, start any business, and they have a goal in mind and they want to reach it. And to get there, they have to do things that might not be a part of that goal. Like you were saying, you had a product line in mind, but you have to build custom furniture. You have to do one-offs. You have to do that to run up to that and to climb that mountain to be able to do what you want to do. There are so many stories of people just getting stuck along the way where they want to get to one place, but they just can't build up enough momentum, or they can't make enough money, or they just get stuck in that way of doing the thing that they thought was the bridge, but that becomes their actual thing. So let's talk more about how you were able to move from what you needed to do to what you wanted to do.
Yeah, absolutely. That is a really hard thing. And in fact, we just 2 weeks ago stopped taking custom orders. So it has still continued this whole time. But I can say two important things that happened. One is that I met someone named Ben Isakoff, who also lives in Winnipeg. He has a business called Congruent Clarity, and he's a business consultant, and he worked with manufacturing processes and in corporate America and developed this skill set for basically all my blind spots were found in Ben. And he instructed me on exactly like how to carve out a little bit of time each day, each week, to build the foundation of a successful product line and build the processes for how to make the first products and make sure you have, you know, we have a binder that has exactly how to make these products. And that process has custom fixtures that exist in the wood shop so that we can all make the product identically the same. And building that system at the beginning rather than after the product is launched and it's figured out and already exists, and sort of backtracking to create the system was, I would say, call it revolution number one for me, at least. He helped me to do that. And so from there, it was really easy to find my first part-time hire and say, look, here's the system. I'm going to teach you how to build this product. And that person grew their hours and took more and became full-time slowly over time. because we had this system that they could follow to create our product. And then same thing happened with the next product and the next product. We made sure there was a process in place, and maybe that's taking an hour out of each day to make sure you put time to this and develop that process. But then you still have to go back and build custom furniture and answer to your clients who are wondering where their table is. And building a custom furniture business is a full-time job. So finding an hour a day to just work on the foundation of a product business was really essential. And then once each product had its process down, we could hire people, teach them how to make those things. And that was sort of what I did, is I hired people to build just the products and still did the custom furniture myself. And that's largely how it is still, but I get a lot of help with the custom furniture because my hires have become good woodworkers, and that's fantastic. But ultimately, the goal is to cut off custom furniture. We have 5 to 6 months of projects left, and that's all. And that's very exciting. So at the end of that, we'll be purely a product business, and I'll stop running two businesses at once.
That's a big move to cut off what has been your bread and butter for so long. You said you cut off custom furniture orders 2 weeks ago, but then you followed that up with saying that you still have over half a year of orders still that you have to do. So that had to have been a big chunk of your business. How did you come to that decision monetarily, but also mentally, to basically end a part of your business that seemed like it was a big deal and is still going strong?
I would say it's a pretty easy decision for me. I've always known that the custom furniture business, like it, I don't want to make people feel like it's impossible, but it's just very difficult. And if you take extremely varied projects every time, it's very difficult to find focus and find efficiencies in your workflow and earn good enough money to continue. That's just the nature of the beast. Woodworkers have some of the highest overhead of any business, and they have some of the most demanding clients, and are working with a natural material that can be unpredictable. There's just so many variables that make a custom furniture business nearly impossible to be successful at, especially in a market like Winnipeg. We're a small city of cheap people, and I'm one of them, you know? So it's hard to sell expensive furniture here. And I've just always known, especially now, there's five of us working here, and I'm the bottleneck all the time. And a lot of my time is spent emailing with clients, potential clients, or existing clients, talking about the intricacies of design and trying to come up with certain ways to explain why this feature is going to complement their space or fill up this wall properly. It's like, it's just a lot of work to manage a lot of clients for custom furniture, let alone build the pieces. So as soon as I could, basically, is the answer. And that was 2 weeks ago.
You're on your way out from custom furniture. You've drawn a line in the sand. I can hear the conviction
yes.
in your voice, and it sounds like it's a long time coming. But
I would like to just, one caveat there
is
I love it. I love building special, unique pieces that fit into a specific person's life and space perfectly. And I love that process. And so I'll probably go back to doing one or two pieces a year. I can't ignore that desire. That's all.
No problem. There's nothing better than a beautiful piece of furniture leaving your shop and looking even better in a client's home, and their happiness and their gratitude and the money that they pay you for that all in line and
for sure
feeling good about a finished product. But it is a hard
exactly
business, and it is a hard thing to do for all the reasons you mentioned and more. And I do want to move on from it, because you obviously are moving on from it in a way. But I do want to talk about one more thing, and that is your custom work field guide, because I think that is an amazing little piece of not only marketing, but also customer service. And that's on your website. And I don't know how much longer you'll have it on there, but I do think it's a good resource for people to look at. And I want you to talk a little bit about how you put that together, because I see that it is volume 3. And I don't know if that's just a little joke or if that's been something that you've gone through different versions of, but I'd like for you to talk on that and how you came up with the ideas that are going to be in there and what you want to impart to a customer before you even take that first call with them.
Yeah. So the Custom Work Field Guide, it is version 3, actually. I love graphic design as well. I've been doing graphic design this whole time. Not while speaking on the podcast. I mean, the whole time.
I was going to say it's very impressive. I want to see what you're making.
When I update the wording or the visuals a little bit, I do like a version, 2.3, 2.4, whatever. So the Custom Work Field Guide is an assistant to my process of talking to a new potential customer and ensuring they know what they're getting into. And also, as you say, it is absolutely a sales piece. It has some words in there that I'm proud of that just show that we do know what we're doing. Also kind of show that wood is a material that you have to know the ins and outs of to work with. So it might dissuade them from other people they might be talking to and kicking the tires of who aren't using the proper terminology. And that is kind of important to me. I think that there are some people who start woodworking businesses and don't do their due diligence, and they end up building pieces for people that will twist themselves apart in a year to 5 years. And that is that's a bad thing to do to people, because they trusted you with their money. So I want this out in the world. I want it freely available to people, just to say, this is how fine furniture is made. Even if you're not going with me, I hope that this is what you're sort of getting yourself into. And a big part of my brand is just finding ways of conveying the information about whatever it is, unconscious consumerism, whatever you want to call it, and bringing it into a PDF that has my branding on it and being educational, I guess.
And it also has your pricing on it. It shows that you're billing out at $90 an hour, and that obviously in a vacuum, they don't know how much time a piece is going to take you to make. So $90 an hour is sort of an arbitrary number, but at the same time, it is an actual number and showing the value you put on the shop hours. So exactly. How are you coming to that number, especially with the overhead that you talked about and the employees that you have and all the other things that go into running a furniture company?
Yeah. So the overhead is, a general calculation of all the machinery we have and how long it's going to last and the upkeep, sharpening the blades and repairing whatever. And then obviously the rent on the building. And then there is the hourly wage of the people building it, whether it's me or an employee. And then there is the years of experience and the expertise required to work with the material properly and come to a professionally made product that's going to possibly outlive its buyer. And so I think I also have a note about ethics in there. We're not shipping things on a giant boat across the ocean, spewing diesel into the sea along the way after things were made with probably not great working conditions. in an exploitative labor market. And that's like an important thing for people to realize. They're possibly comparing our price to a piece at Ashley Furniture Home Store. And I don't think that's a fair comparison. And on the one hand, people have a certain amount they can spend on a piece, and I fully respect that. And on the other, when we're the people receiving that money, we have to make sure we're paying livable wages to our employees and ensuring our own, I don't know, ethics are able to be withheld.
You're saying that you're standing apart from sort of mass-produced and soulless companies that are sending things out there. And I know the way you're building. I know the way you are treating your employees. And I understand that that's true. But at the same time, and, you know, forgive me here for playing devil's advocate, you Please. Want to build a company that is making products. And you
For sure.
want to make a lot of these and sell a lot of these. And I don't think the goal is to become a big soulless entity, but at the same time, the goal is to grow and to ship things possibly in containers overseas or to other places as you keep growing and keep being able to pay your employees livable wages and keep being able to treat everybody around you well and keep being able to make things sustainable. So how are you balancing that growth idea with the idea of things that you don't want to turn into?
I think that it's important to say that growth is sort of, growth is an important part in the beginning because you need to reach a size that is big enough to spread the cost of the administrative costs, the building costs, the machinery costs, like all the fixed costs of the business don't really work at 2 employees or 3 employees. And so growth is inevitable to outrun those things and reach a point where the business can generate profit, give people raises, give people, you know, vacation pay, healthcare. You know, we don't do that yet. We're brand new. I hired my first employee 20 months ago. So now we're at 5. I think that once we're at 6 or 7, like there might be a purposeful kind of slowing of the growth and things are a little out of stock once in a while instead of taking pre-orders, because I agree with you. I don't know what that looks like yet. I haven't fully thought through what the end goal is, but at this moment, the growth is purely to outrun the fixed cost of running a business like this and allow me the space to come down to 40 or maybe 35 hours a week and be able to spend more time doing R&D on new products and instead of what I'm doing right now, which is overworking myself, spending not enough time with my new daughter. And I think growth at all costs is part of the problem of today's society. And it's an important thing to be conscious of. We'll see where we're at in 5 years, but I don't imagine we'll be 20 or 30 employees. And now at the same time, I'd like to say my 3 woodshop guys are all telling me horror stories of the jobs they worked before constantly. And they're happy to be here. Will and Mac, Tyler are just loving it here. And there's a great energy in the shop. We talk about video games and we build wood products and we have a blast doing it. And so the opportunities of this business as it grows, I can spread the wealth around and they can live better lives and have actual careers instead of whatever the alternative would be. I think that if we're treating employees with the respect they deserve and building something that's a positive influence in them and their families' lives, then that growth is justified.
I don't want it to seem like an understatement that you are ending the custom furniture and you're starting this new leg of your journey, because starting a business back in 2016, like you did, and then being able to build it all the way up to where you are now, and then in only 20 months, hiring 5 employees, that's a big step, and a big mental step and a big physical step for you, for the business, for the bank account, for the people who are working there. So that is not a small decision to make. And I want to ask you about your advice for people who are either starting out and want to have a business, or people who are moving along like you have and are in the middle of their business and they want to reinvent themselves and go a different way. So what advice from your experience so far could you share with people listening?
I would say that in general, we all are who we are. And it's important to embrace that in yourself and just identify your strengths and try and build your process around those strengths. And don't feel the pressure from everyone all the time to be good at everything. And naturally push yourself to be better at the things that you need to be better at. But maybe pick one. Pick one thing that you know to be important that you aren't very good at. Maybe it's your bookkeeping. Maybe it's your like client communication, whatever it is, and just focus on that for a while and iron that out a bit, and don't feel too much pressure to just do everything at once. And also just accept that it takes a long time. You hear 5 years, you hear 7 years. This is my 8th year this June, and I feel like I've literally just figured it out. So don't be hard on yourself. My admin assistant, Valentina, in her interview, actually, I asked her for good advice. And I've thought about it every day since then. And it was exactly this. And it led me to that answer, which is, if you pick the thing that you've been avoiding and stop avoiding it, you will succeed. It's like, of course.
Makes sense. It makes sense to me. And it's a beautiful thing to hear somebody who has been doing this for 8 years, has been designing and building for their entire life, and then has been doing it professionally for 8 years, and then be here today telling me that you feel like you've just started, and this is a brand new horizon for you. And I love hearing that, because it is all about reinventing yourself and reinventing your company and the way you think about things, because the world isn't static and you need to move along with it. So I love hearing that, and I am excited to see and hear about where this business takes you. And if you've just started a new chapter, I'm excited to read the rest of the book, man. So thank you so much for your time, and I appreciate it, and looking forward to hearing where you go next, and wishing you nothing but success in everything you do.
Thank you very much, and thank you for having me. This was great.
Thank you so much for listening to the show. If you liked what you heard and you got value out of it, please think about leaving a review and subscribing wherever you listen. To learn more about the series, please visit buildingafurniturebrand.com, and feel free to reach out anytime with questions or guest suggestions to hello@buildingafurniturebrand.com. You can find me at The Build with Ethan on Instagram. Hope you enjoyed the show, and can't wait to bring you the next one.